Jonathan, Tom, welcome back to Full Story.
Hi, Noor.
Hey, Noor.
Jonathan, I might start with you. It's been 8 weeks since the war on Iran began. First and foremost, it's having devastating consequences for the people there. And then there's the ripple effect right around the world, including for lower income families here in Australia. You've been looking at that. What are you seeing?
There was almost an immediate reaction. And there's the war and the way that kind of pessimism feeds through the population. But the very visible sign of that was you're driving and petrol prices on the side of the road are going up. And what happened was that people were already a bit on edge. There'd been interest rate rise. Inflation had already been ticking up. And then you get this outbreak in a new cost that many households will struggle with. And that cost will also feed through to all parts of the economy. And people immediately just almost went into pandemic mode again. So one of the big changes that happened were people at the supermarket just put an extra can or two of tinned spaghetti or canned fruit into their basket. It's almost like those pandemic era habits just came flooding back again. I guess we're all products of or react to big global forces, and the pandemic was a defining feature of these generations, and we're falling back into those habits.
Mm. Tell me a little bit more about what's happening in the town of Ballarat.
Right. So I spoke to a household there, and they are giving tips to other people in Ballarat on how to feed your family, how to do it on a tight budget. And what they noticed was that as soon as petrol prices started to rise, and that the people in their community wanted long-lasting items for a couple of reasons. One, because they're usually cheaper. So getting your tin fruit and beans and rice and those pantry items that will last a long time. And so they wanted to move those in more into their meals. But also it saved on the cost of them having to drive to the supermarket. So a few things going on, and they saw an immediate switch to these sorts of products.
Mm. Tom, Jonathan says some people have clicked into pandemic mode. A poll by the Australian National University released this week found that life satisfaction is lower now than it was during COVID. Were you surprised by those findings?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you don't have to travel very far to see that there is a lack of confidence and anxiety and concern in the community about geopolitical events, about the state of the economy. But for life satisfaction in this poll by Nicholas Biddle from ANU to be lower than during COVID lockdowns really is a stark statistic. I think it points to the challenge that the government has in managing the economy, things like consumer confidence, but also some of the changes in purchasing habit that Jonathan's describing. And we've seen it on fuel as well. You know, people assuming that there's going to be disruptions, stocking up, filling up every tank possible and pushing demand to breaking point. So therefore creating a crisis just through panic buying.
Mm. The lead researcher said that financial stress is higher than it ever has been in the 2020s, and life satisfaction has dropped from an already low level. Do you get the sense, Tom, that the government understands just how deep that sentiment runs and then the need to act?
Yeah, I do think they have a sense of that. I think part of the problem is the fatigue that exists from those COVID years when everything was disrupted and it was very difficult for people to live normal lives. I think around the world, but here in Australia as well, there are long lingering memories of that. There's also an effect on public finances that hedges anything the government can do. They're facing rising inflation, so household assistance might be difficult, and there's big government debt. But I do think that there's an awareness there. I think we're seeing that in some of the communications from the government and their heightened alert view of how things are registering in the community and what they're talking points and what their messaging is actually what's getting through to people. There's a real consideration about that going on.
One of the big issues coming through in the data and in the surveys is that people are really worried about their jobs and even more worried now than they were in, say, August 2020, that which was really the depths and before JobKeeper was expanded and people actually more worried now than they were then, which is quite extraordinary. But this is specifically happening in some industries, things like construction. They're seeing costs rise. They're unsure if households are going to keep renovating or building. You're seeing it in hospitality as well, because as people start to pare back their spending, then venues are thinking, well, will I need to reduce staff numbers? And there's also going to be businesses really doing it tough who might be, for example, a cafe that you would typically go on a day trip to visit, or it's on a route somewhere else that you would go for a holiday, and people are trying to watch their petrol usage and therefore not attending those venues so much.
It's already being described as the largest energy shock in our history. If it persists and transport and delivery costs keep rising, how could that impact food supply, the price of other essential goods, housing?
Well, we're moving into what economists call stagflation. So we have a stagnant economy, but rising inflation. And it's a very difficult thing for both central bankers, but also for governments to manage, because looking at it from an interest rate perspective, if they raise rates to try and combat inflation, then they run the risk of running the economy into the ground and leading to more joblessness. And if they kind of ease on the rates to help the economy, then they run the risk that inflation gets out of control. So the thing with oil or the refined products like jet fuel and unleaded petrol and diesel is that it just goes everywhere. Anything that you transport, anything that uses freight, anything that actually uses that to make a product, well, the price will rise. And as we learned in the pandemic, in the inflationary years after that, it's always the consumer that lands on.
Mm-hmm. Tom, we are 3 weeks out from the federal budget. Normally at this stage, we'd be reporting that the government's putting the finishing touches on its budget, but things are just so unpredictable. One moment the strait's open, then it's closed. Inflation is already regarded as being far too high at 3.7 and will be getting worse. What is the government considering? Is it clear if there'll be more measures in the upcoming budget to address cost of living pressures?
Yeah, you don't envy the Treasurer and the Prime Minister and the bureaucrats putting together the budget. They've already said a few times now that the final numbers will be settled later than usual, closer to the 12th of May when the budget will be released. And this week, the rhetoric from the Treasurer stepped up a notch, I think. He said that already the economic ramifications from war in the Middle East are serious, but they still could become severe. The government expects inflation to go north of 5%. And yesterday, Jim Chalmers was talking about the flow-on effects for economic growth, but also higher unemployment. As Jonathan says, that will be worrying. So I think the ability for the government to pass on household assistance is front of mind for Jim Chalmers and for others involved in the ERC deliberations here in Canberra. But at the moment, we don't know exactly what they'll be. The Prime Minister said a couple of weeks ago at the press club that they'll do everything they can to make sure that the higher cost of commodities around the world does not flow on to household power prices. So I think that is an indication that assistance for vulnerable households is probably going to be included in the budget.
Jim Chalmers is hinting at what may be in the budget, framing it as a budget that will address intergenerational fairness. What does that mean? What are they considering on that front when it comes to some of the structural changes or reforms that could be made?
Yeah, it's interesting. Amid all of this chaos, and as you say, all of the assumptions are shifting from day to day, so it's a dynamic situation, the government insists that they are going to stick to their promise of economic reform, tax reform, and as you say, addressing intergenerational unfairness in the system. The things that we're getting the impression of is changes to property investor tax breaks, things like negative gearing and capital gains tax. Those changes are designed to make it easier for first-time buyers to get into the property market, rebalancing the scales a little bit away from investors who might already own a home and one or more investment properties and towards people trying to buy their first home. But I think there'll be other changes as well. Exactly the scale of things we won't know until the day, but the Treasurer said this week that the biggest area of savings for the budget will be the National Disability Insurance Scheme. He acknowledged that on its current trajectory, it is costing more than the government can afford. It's something around $50 billion a year at the moment, and left untouched, it will go beyond $60 billion before the end of the decade. The growth rate is more than 10% at the moment, which for a social program that everyone agrees is extremely important, that is an unsustainable trajectory, I think.
Mm. Jonathan, this week NAB warned its shareholders to expect borrowers to struggle with loan repayments. Are we looking at a scenario where that could start to happen?
It's intriguing how quickly things have deteriorated. I mean, it was only less than a year ago that it looked like rates were going down, inflation was under control, and then suddenly there was a reignition of those price rises and then the war. So one of the things is households weren't really prepared for this, and so they're paying more on their mortgage repayments. It wasn't really a long runway to get prepared, and now they're looking, according to most forecasts, at several more rate rises. What's happening now are people making immediate changes to their budget, and usually those changes take longer to come through. Like, you might make those changes over several months, but people are already struggling. And so right away you saw, like, I'm not going to have a takeaway coffee today. And that's actually, while it sounds insignificant, to change a daily habit is actually a sign of pretty severe stress and uncertainty about the future. And so people are making those immediate changes now so that they can make those repayments. Now, we're early in the piece, so households are trying to get across it. And a lot of this just is determined on how this conflict ends and how long we need to deal with higher oil prices that are just going to keep feeding and embedding into the economy. So there's not going to be an immediate fall, but yeah, if this just lingers, it's going to make it very difficult.
Jonathan, what happens if businesses are unable to pay back loans? What are the knock-on effects of that?
Well, businesses are really concerned at the moment. There's a couple of things happening. They're seeing their costs rise, but they're also seeing what they describe as forward orders. So any type of kind of contract or future purchase, they're seeing those drop off, which is a pretty bad combination. So their first instinct will be to cut costs. And of course, that might result in people losing their jobs. So households have made a similar point that people are worried about their jobs, and businesses are actually telling us that, well, this could be a scenario if this kind of situation persists.
We'll be right back.